sermon is going to be the second part of the two-part study on the beast of Daniel and Revelation. This morning's sermon was primarily focused on the four beasts of Daniel, specifically the four beasts of Daniel chapter number 7. Now the ultimate goal is to come back to Revelation chapter number 13 here in the end of end of time, the end times Bible prophecy, and identify who this particular beast is in Revelation chapter number 13. Now this sermon, the sermon this morning, that is, was what, if it felt like a cliffhanger, it was meant to be. If it felt like it was just very basic, rudimentary knowledge, it was meant to be. Because let me say this, and I said this earlier today as well, if you do not understand, at least on a rudimentary level, at least have a basic knowledge or understanding of Daniel, you will not understand Revelation 13 at all. The book of Revelation is not meant to just read the book of Revelation alone. That is not how the Bible is written. That is not how the book of Revelation is meant. You are commanded as a Christian, study to show thyself approved unto God. You're supposed to compare spiritual things with spiritual things. You're supposed to compare Scripture. Studying is not the same as just reading. Studying is comparing things, dividing things, right? That is, dispensationalists just completely maul that verse. That is not what that means, dividing the Bible up and all these. No, it's putting things into categories. It's comparing two things and understanding what goes where, right? Now, I want you guys to go back to Daniel chapter number 7. We're going to quickly just blow through a couple of things in Daniel 7, and then we're going to compare some other scriptures in light of what we've already learned today. Now, and that was this morning, of course. In Daniel chapter number 7, the one major thing that may have been new to you that is in contrast to the orthodox view or the traditional view of end times Bible prophecy, and in particular in light of the four beasts, is that these four beasts reign in succession, right? One after another, right? Number one. And number two is that they teach that the first beast is who? Nebuchadnezzar. Now, I want to stress this. We clearly disprove that. That's without a shadow of a doubt. How? Because the context is this took place, this vision took place at the time of Belshazzar, who is the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. It goes of the kings of Babylon, you have Nebuchadnezzar, Evil-Merodach, and then you have, who we're reading about here, Belshazzar, the time of Belshazzar, correct? At that point, at the time of Belshazzar, the angel tells Daniel, the person that interprets this, and he says, these are four kings that shall arise out of the earth. Future tense. That is the end of the discussion as far as whether this can be, is it possible for this to be Nebuchadnezzar. It's not Nebuchadnezzar. Now, not only is that incorrect, but I'm going to prove to you right now, and this is extremely important, and this is where everything's going to kind of pick up speed, and we're going to start interpreting some of this by comparing Scripture with Scripture. I'm going to prove to you without a shadow of a doubt that these four kings are reigning concurrently. That these four kings, that there is a time in which all four of these kingdoms are upon this earth. All four of these kingdoms, this would be known as them being contemporaries. This is a contemporaneous view is what this is referred to as. Now I want you to look there in Daniel chapter number 7. And I want to focus real quick on, let's go to verse number, well, real quick, let's do this actually. Time out. 1 second. So let's give a quick rundown of what these verses are. So what we have in verses 1 through 7 are the beasts actually mentioned in his view of what he sees with these beasts. So real quick, then verse 8 is about the Antichrist. So we have a summary. Verses 1 through 7 is Daniel telling you what he sees in the vision. Verse 8 is the Antichrist. And then what we see in verses 9 through 11 is what takes place after that. Now, I want to explain something to you too as well, just for your own personal understanding. When we read here in verse 9, it says this, I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit. Now, notice how fast all that took place, right? That's why he made sure that he explained to you in verse number 1 that he was going to tell you the sum of the matter. He's just giving you, the overview of this. He's giving you the overarching, the main details or the main points, right? He's not telling you every detail. Now, when does that take place? Verse 9, and beheld that the thrones were cast down, it says, and the Ancient of Days did sit. And he goes on to explain, it says in verse 10, and it says, the judgment was set there at the very end, and the books were opened. Now, when does that take place? Exactly. So notice we just skipped 1,000 years. Do you see how this is the sum of the matter, right? You understand how this is just, he's giving you the highlights. Everything's moving very fast. He's giving you the sum of the matter. Now, verse 11, actually, he backs up again. And he's just repeating the same thing, but he's giving you another detail. He says, I beheld then because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake. Now, is the horn around during the millennial reign? No. It's the Antichrist. The horn is not around during the millennial reign, right? So what he did right there, just so that you understand what's going on as far as the summary of this chapter, is he just backed up. Notice he restated the same thing. He set up in verse 9, I beheld till the thrones were cast down, right? So he's saying, I watched this until the thrones were cast down. Then when he goes to repeat it in verse 11, he just says the same thing again. He says, I beheld then because of the voice of the great words, you know, which the horn spake. So he backs back up again, right? Now, I want to show that to you further because he says this. I beheld them because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake. I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. Now, who is the beast right here specifically? This is the Antichrist that's being spoken of. And even more so because it actually, in this context, refers to his body. It actually talks of his body here. He is slain and he's given to the burning fire. And when you actually look this up, it occurs right before the millennial reign begins in Revelation chapter 20, where he's thrown into hell, correct? Everyone's well aware of that. Now, here's the thing. Notice what it says here. I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. So at the end of this time when the thrones are cast down, the Antichrist is thrown into hell, right? But I want you to pay close attention to verse number 12. It says this, and concerning the rest of the beasts. Now who are the rest of the beasts that he's speaking of right now? How many beasts were there total? Four. So how many is he talking about now? Three. So we're speaking of the three other beasts other than who? The Antichrist. Now what did those beasts represent? They represented kings and kingdoms, right? They represented specifically in this context, I would say it could be kings or kingdoms, either one. And I want you to look at that, keep that in mind when we read this verse. Look what it says in verse 12. And concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. That is key. Now, what is he talking about in context? He's saying the one beast who is who? The Antichrist, his body is taken and given to the burning flame. When does that take place? When the thrones are cast down. But guess what? Those other three beasts, they're there too. They were on the earth prior to this beast. They're there at that exact time. They are on the earth at the same time that the fourth beast is there. And he makes the statement saying, concerning the other three beasts, concerning the rest of the beasts, he says their dominion was taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season at a time. What's his point? He's saying they're not cast into the lake of fire. They're there during that time, but they're not taken and thrown into hell. Their lives are prolonged for a season and for a time. So do you know what that proves without a shadow of a doubt? That these four beasts are all on the earth, all at the same exact time. There's no way around that. All four of these beasts are all on the earth, all at the same time. The one beast is taken, and he's thrown. The Antichrist is thrown into hell. But the other three beasts, their lives are prolonged, meaning that their lives are made longer. They're able to live, right? For a season of time. And then it says this, but they had their dominion taken away. Why would they have their dominion taken away? What's the reason? Because, right, the Lord Jesus Christ comes back, and what happens? He's reigning over the whole earth. He is now ruling and reigning. Look at verse 13. See if that makes sense in context. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Look at this. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion. So notice that all peoples, nations, and languages will serve him, the Son of Man. They're no longer serving the three beasts. They're serving the Son of Man. Now also, I want you to notice the location of this verse in relation to the other verses. This is not in chronological order. Do you get that? Just a moment ago, we skipped forward to the great white throne. Now we're skipping backwards again to where we see when the dominion is given unto the Son of Man. That's at the same time that the first beast or the fourth beast is given to the burning flame. You see how he's going back and forth? So what he did there was he gave you the four beasts, the rundown of the four beasts of just seeing them, not necessarily seeing how they interact or how they grow or how they change and what takes place at that time. And then he stops in verse 9, and then he says, I beheld, saying, I watched these beasts until their thrones were cast down, saying their kingdom came to an end, right? Then he sees the Lord, the Ancient of Days, referring to him being eternal, seated upon his throne at this time, and he watches all the way until the great white throne judgment. This is happening rapidly in a vision that he's having, in a dream that he's having, and he's just telling us the sum of the matter, just a concise, brief summary. Then he backs up again, and he's just repeating himself, saying, I beheld until, and then he refers to when the beast was taken and slain. And then he says, during that time, the other three beasts' lives were prolonged for a season and a time, and then he sees the Son of Man coming. Isn't that interesting that when he repeats himself the next time, that it's the Son of Man who comes? Now, when you pay close attention to this, and you read on down, I pointed this out earlier, he says that it's the Ancient of Days that came, because the Ancient of Days is the Son of Man. That's why when you compare this and it goes back and forth, it doesn't. They're the same. Son of Man, Ancient of Days. Who comes in the cloud in Revelation 19? Son of Man. What's he look like? Ancient of Days. It's the same person. Man. It's very, very, it's super clear. Now, I want you to flip over. My secondary proof that they are, I want you to go over Daniel 8. My secondary proof is by comparing this to Daniel chapter number 8. I'm going to do two things when we look at Daniel chapter number 8. And we're not going to spend near as much time. This morning I wanted to go slow. I wanted to, you know, this is a Bible study, but tonight is going to be much faster. We're going to be looking at much more scriptures. So you got to pay close attention. This morning's sermon, I was moving slow. I just wanted to lay a foundation. This chapter number 8, we're not going to move through. I said all that to say, chapter number 8, we're going to fly through this real quick. We're going to look at a lot of scriptures in here. Stay awake. Make sure you're paying attention. Look at chapter 8, verse number 1. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me, even unto me, Daniel, after that which appeared unto me at the first. Now, I want you to notice, by the way, he makes a connection between the vision he just had and this vision. There's a reason why. Verse 2, and I saw in a vision, and it came to pass when I saw that I was at Shushan in the palace, which is in the province of Elam. And I saw in a vision, and I was by the river of Uli. Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before me the river, a ram, which had two horns. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other. And the higher came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward, northward, and southward, so that no beast might stand before him, neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Now pay close attention to what's going on. So you have a ram first, right? A ram that has two horns. Now you have a goat that comes. It says that he touched not the ground, saying that he is very fast. And it says that he had a notable horn. There's something of note. There's something of notice. There's something that stands out about this horn that he has on his head. It says that he has a notable horn between his eyes. Verse 6. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with choler against him, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns. So we can see that this other goat that came up destroyed the ram, right? It says that he smote him. Keep reading there. Therefore, verse 8, let's skip down. Therefore, the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. I want you to notice that. We're going to skip here in just a minute down a little bit. We're going to look at the interpretation of this. But when this goat, once that one notable horn becomes great, there's a time in which he is destroyed or he is brought down, right? His kingdom is broken. And we're going to see the interpretation in a moment. And then four pop up after that. Okay, look at verse 9. And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceeding great. Now, does that sound familiar? What was the little horn that we saw prior to this? It was the Antichrist. So now we see something that's actually tying those two visions together, right? Notice how he made a connection in the beginning, that after the first. So he wants to reference that, right? Now we see the little horn popping up. I want you to look there at verse number 10, and it waxed great, even to the host of heaven. And it cast down some of the hosts and of the stars to the ground and stamped upon them. Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the host. And by him the daily sacrifice was taken away. And the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Now there is no question who is being referred to here. This is extremely obvious that this is the Antichrist that is being spoken of, right? He is, of those four, there is a little horn that comes up out of the four. I want you to notice that. Keep that in mind. So skip over to let's skip over to verse number 15. Keep reading here. And it came to pass when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and sought for the meaning, then, behold, there stood before me as the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Ulai, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. So he's going to interpret the vision for him. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell upon my face. But he said unto me, understand, O son of man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. Now I want you to notice what he said right there. At the time of the end shall be the vision. Verse 18, now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground, and he touched me and set me upright. And he said, behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed the end shall be. The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia. Verse 21, and the rough goat is the king of Grecia, that's Greece. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. So that's the first king of the king of Grecia, right? Now look at verse number 22. Now that being broken, so the king of Grecia was broken, right? The horn was broken, the notable horn was broken. Now that being broken, whereas, watch this, four stood up for it, and it says this, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation. Now I want you to notice that right there. Four kingdoms shall stand up, it says, out of that nation. Out of the nation, which we would consider Grecia is what he just identified as, right? As Greece. Now he says this at the end of verse number 22, but not in his power. Not in whose power? He's saying not in the power of that first king. Not in the power of the king that was reigning of Grecia. Read it one more time. Now that being broken. So that there is the subject. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's the first crown, or that's the first horn, that's the first king that was reigning in Grecia. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation. What does it mean out of the nation? That they are going to in some way derive their origin from that nation. But it says, but not in his power. Now, why does it say not in his power? Now, the kingdom of Grecia, you know, it would be Alexander the Great. His power, you know, people will try to identify these four kingdoms as the four kingdoms in history. That is not what this is talking about. There's no possible way. When he gave his power to supposedly, you know, these four guys, they did not possess a kingdom. They did not have a great kingdom. There are so many different things that don't line up with Scripture when you try to look at Scripture and then look at history. Notice that these four kingdoms are not going to stand up in his power. That's the way that you can prove that, saying that they are going to rise of their own power, but they're going to come from that nation. That's what it's saying. It's saying that the power that he had, a kingdom has power, right? A kingdom has authority and a dominion. It's saying that that dominion and that power and that authority is not going to be distributed to these four kings. What it's saying is that out of that nation, there will at some time arise four kingdoms in the future. That's what it's saying, but not in his power. He did not. That's the exact opposite of what people try to identify this as of happening in the past. He did not pass on this power, is what it's saying. It was not Alexander the Great just distributing this power to these four kings. Now, I want you to look at verse number 23 to further prove this happens later. It says this, and in the latter time of their kingdom, of whose kingdom? These four kingdoms that are reigning and ruling on the earth. when the transgressors are come to the full. Now I want you to notice the language that is used right there. What is it trying to convey to you? That there's going to be I believe that there will be a big time gap. We see that already just by looking at the Bible. But that there is a gap between the time that they arise from that nation, and then there will be four nations that come up out of that nation, but not in his power. There will be a period of time. How would they come up but not in his power? Saying that they come out of that nation, but that they are not, they are going to have to start from scratch. And I want you to think about this for a moment. What do we see when we look at Daniel chapter number 7? How many beasts are there? There are four beasts. And what do those four beasts represent? They represent four kingdoms. Where do they come from? Do they derive from another kingdom? Think about that for a minute. No, they do not. Where do they come from? They all arise just like straight out of the sea. They all just arise straight out of what? What is it? What does the sea represent in the book of... Because the same thing happens when they see the one beast come up. In the book of Revelation, what does the sea represent? They come up out of peoples and nations and tongues. That's what the sea represents. Not in his power is a very key statement that you have to understand, that it's not a transfer of power. They are not arising in his power. They are starting by their own power. Now, the way to prove that these are the same four kingdoms is very simple, because it says this: and in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to a full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper in practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. Who's it speaking of? The Antichrist. So notice that four kingdoms arise out of this one kingdom, which is Grecia, right? And those four kingdoms are four horns that pop up, right? But if you look over, we can clearly identify this as being the Antichrist. Because if you look over what we read earlier, and I pointed this out in verse number 8. Therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. Now notice that language of the four winds of heaven. What is the purpose of the four winds of heaven? What exactly? That's exactly what it is. The four winds of heaven. What does it say happened when in Daniel chapter number 7 when those four beasts arose? It says that the four winds of the earth strove upon the sea. And what do the seas represent? Multitudes, peoples, nations, saying that these are four kingdoms where? All over, all upon the face of the earth. If you keep reading verse number 9, it says this: and out of one of them, out of one of what? Look back at verse 8. It says, therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and for it came up four notable ones towards the four winds of heaven. So where are these going to be? These kingdoms are going to be all over the earth is the point. They're going to be located. These four kingdoms are not going to be in one location. They're going to be all over the earth, which makes perfect sense if they're not coming up in his power. But they will, as far as ethnically, derive from there. I believe that what that means is that this will be of a Western society. This will be, because what you can do is, as far as, you know, if you were to look at the ethnicities today, and if you were to trace back, you know, power from the United States of America, it goes clearly from United States of America, you know, you would go back to the British Empire, and there is a clear lineage all the way back to Rome, to Persia, all the way back, it would be, and then also, I'm sorry, not to Persia, but to Greece, and it stops in Greece. So you would see these four notable kingdoms come up at some point just all over the earth, and you have no clue. And the further proof that these are the same four beasts that we looked at in Daniel chapter number 7 is how many beasts or how many horns arose on top of this particular goat that we're speaking of. How many horns was it? It was four, right? How many beasts were in Daniel 7? Four. And where did the Antichrist come from? One of the four. You see how that lines up perfectly? One of the four. Now, like this says here, when you look over in chapter 22, that four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power, saying that it's not going to be that he just transfers this power. I believe that it's teaching, of course, as we know, that time will have to go on for a while, and then these four nations will eventually arise. That's why it says in verse 23, and in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full. So there's a period of time that has to go by. There's another time in the Bible where the Bible talks about where God is waiting for the transgressors to come to its fullness. Does anybody know what I'm talking about right now? When God is speaking unto Abraham, he's talking about them acquiring the land in Canaan, right? And he tells them that they are not going to go in and possess that land right away because he is waiting for their transgressions to be full, their transgressions to be made full, saying that God would not be righteous to go in there and just destroy them and kick them out. Now think about this, how much time went by? Was it a little bit of time or a lot after he told them that? Hundreds of years, 400 years, right? A long period of time. So notice the other time we see this passage mentioned, when the transgressors are come to the full, there's going to be a long period of time. But you'll be able to trace these nations in whatever way back to that nation. In whatever way, they spread out throughout the earth, and they do not rise up in their own power, and they are all over the four winds of heaven. Now, I want to further look at this one other time. I want you to flip over to, look over at Daniel 9. There's a statement that's made in Daniel 10, actually. Daniel chapter number 10, verse number 14, it says this. Daniel chapter number 10, verse number 14, it says this. Now I am come to make thee understand what shall befall thy people. Look at this. In the latter days. Watch this. For yet the vision is for many days. So this is far in the future. This vision is far in the future. He says he's going to tell them about it in the latter days. Further proof of that. Flip over to Daniel chapter number 11. And Daniel chapter number 11 is clearly speaking of what's going to take place in the end times. It starts off again speaking about Grecia, but I want you to notice how it conveys the idea of a gap again, of there being time in between when Grecia is defeated, and then there'll be a time later on when four nations arise, but not in his power. That's the whole point of that statement, not in his power, saying that power is not transferred to those four nations. And they are four separate kingdoms that are all reigning at the same time. And notice what it said about the Antichrist. It said in the time of their kingdom. Notice, this was my other proof. I forgot to point this out. The little horn came up out of one of those horns, right? Those four horns were a kingdom. And he says in the time of their kingdom that it speaks of the Antichrist that he will arise. So notice, all four are what? Reigning at the exact same time. Again, so we can see that these are contemporaries. All of them are reigning at the exact same time. Look at Daniel chapter number 11, verse number 1. Also I, in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm and to strengthen him. And now will I show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all. And by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia. Verse 3, and a mighty king shall stand up that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. Then it says this in verse 4, and when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken and shall be divided toward the four winds of heaven. Now notice what it's trying to convey when it says that it's broken and it's divided to what? The four winds of heaven, saying that this kingdom will be divided all throughout the earth and shall be divided to the four winds of heaven. Now watch this, and not to his posterity, nor according to his dominion which he rules. So notice, it's not given to his posterity. This is not just handed off to one other person. Notice what it says after that as well. For his kingdom shall be plucked up even for others beside those. So notice that his kingdom, his power comes to an end. His kingdom and his power actually hits an end. And then you have a paragraph marker right there. We begin in verse number 5 and notice what it says. And the king of the south shall be strong, and one of his princes, and he shall be strong above him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. So now all of a sudden we start talking about these four kings that are reigning throughout the earth, right? And he starts speaking about the king of the south. And then it says in verse 6, and in the end of years they shall join themselves together. Notice that statement. And in the end of years they shall join themselves together. So a few different times we see Daniel in Daniel chapter number 10, where he's told clearly that this will not happen for many days. This will not happen until the latter times, the latter days. He repeatedly says that this is going to be many years. And then right here it tells you, and in the end of years, it says, they shall join themselves together. Because there will be a long period of time. This kingdom will be broken, and then in the latter days, in the end of the years, these kingdoms will come together, and then at that time, you will see these four kingdoms. Where do they arise? Do they arise? Are they derived from one other kingdom? Do they just grow up out of another kingdom? Is the kingdom transferred from one person to another? No, it's not in his power. They just come up out of the sea, just all on their own. And then we see and then that's what's given the description of the first beast, second beast, third beast, and then the fourth beast is given. Now I want to go to the New Testament. Flip over to Revelation chapter number 13. Revelation chapter number 13, and we're going to look at verse number 1 now. We're going to begin here in Revelation chapter number 13, verse number 1. So we can see here the clear comparison between when Grecia is destroyed, there are four kings that come up. Now think about this too. Think about how we can clearly prove that those four kingdoms that come up, there are four kingdoms, and out of one of those kingdoms comes up who? The Antichrist, right? Now think about how much error you would be in if you tried to take the Persia and the Medes and Grecia and make them, kingdom 2 and 3 of just the horn of that one beast. Does everyone understand what I'm saying? Because here's the thing. What people will do is they'll look at the four beasts in Daniel chapter number 7. And who do they say? Let's do it real quick. Who do they say the first beast is? Babylon, right? Nebuchadnezzar, right? Who do they say the second beast is? They say the second beast is the Persians and the Medes, right? Who do they say the third beast is? They say the third beast is Grecia, right? Then they say the fourth beast is Rome, right? Okay, well, when we get over and we look in Daniel chapter number 8, when we see a clear comparison between these two, because we see four come up also, don't we? But are they the beast prior to that? They're not, are they? Because what do we see? We see first the ram that comes. And who is the ram? The ram, yeah, exactly. The ram is Persians and the Medes. And then the ram is defeated by the goat. And the goat is who? The goat is Grecia. The goat is like what we would consider Western society. That's where the philosophy of all the Western world comes from. That's where all the ideology, the culture, everything was passed down of Western society, Western civilization of what we would be today, goes back to not Persia and Medes, but to Grecia. Now you see in Grecia, inside of Grecia, that four kingdoms pop up inside of Grecia. And of those four who are all reigning at the exact same time, one little horn comes up of those four. Now what? Now if we were to try to apply, a comparison between Daniel 7 and Daniel 8 there, and we were to try to make, in Daniel 7, those beasts to be in successive order of being Babylon, and then being the Persians, Medes, and then being Greece, and then Rome, that would not line up. What would line up is where that little horn sprouted from out of those four kingdoms. So what's going on is you're seeing in Daniel chapter number 8, you're seeing a time lapse of history of one empire who actually is ruling the world, conquering another empire who is ruling the world. And then when that empire later on is grown and made strong, Alexander the Great was destroyed. And his empire came to nothing. And then it was dissolved. Therefore, the other nations that will rise later, they do not arise in his power. And then we see what? What comes up all at the same time? Four kingdoms. And it tells you that they are all reigning all at the same time. And it says in the latter days of their kingdom. So what actually lines up? Medes, Persians, and Greece? Or those four notable horns? The four notable horns, because they're all reigning at the same time. And then we see at the time of their kingdom, not the time of Grecia's kingdom, not the time of Persian Medes' kingdom, we see at the time of their kingdom is when the little horn arises. So that's when the Antichrist actually comes. Now I want you to look at Revelation chapter number 13, verse number 1. And I hit on this a little bit earlier, but I want you to look at Revelation chapter number 13, verse number 1, and we're going to compare this unto what we looked at in Daniel chapter number 7. So it says in Revelation chapter number 13, verse number 1, it says, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy." So first of all, we can see the comparison of them arising out of the sea. Just like we saw the other four beasts do what? Arise out of the sea. In the New Testament, it interprets the peoples and nations and tongues as being what? The sea. So when we look back in retrospect at in the Old Testament in Daniel 7 and we see those four beasts arise out of the sea, it makes perfect sense that they are reigning where? On different quadrants of the earth, right? On different areas of the earth. And where does it say that those four notable horns are going to be reigning? It says that they are spread to the four winds of heaven, the four winds of the earth, that they're reigning all over different locations of the earth. But now here, when we get to Revelation chapter number 13, we see a very similar vision, but there are big differences, aren't there? What do we see in Revelation 13 when he looks in the sea? Number one, we see that there is a great beast that rises up out of the sea. So are there four beasts here? There's only one beast. One beast rises up out of the sea, and it says this, having seven heads and ten horns. And it says, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns, ten crowns, and upon his heads, the name of blasphemy. Look at verse number two. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth were in his mouth as the mouth of a lion. Now, I don't know what this means, but if you look at this and you compare the order in which it's presented here in the book of Revelation, it is actually the exact reverse order that's given here, that in which it is given. It could be that the authority changed. It could be, and this makes perfect sense, that if these are contemporaries, of course, they all four didn't just come up in one day. You know, they came up during the same age, or they came up during the same time period, but they are all four. There is a time in which all four of these kingdoms are reigning upon the earth. So one kingdom could come up, and then another 20 years later, another kingdom comes up. Another 10 years later, another kingdom comes up, because he does present them in an order, right? Now, what happens to a kingdom over time, usually? It degrades. A kingdom over time, they don't get stronger and better. They may be climbing for a while, but they're ultimately going to downfall. Just like every kingdom that has ever reigned on this earth, on the face of this earth, they eventually go downhill. Now, I'll tell you one reason why. This is just, possible. It's just possible. This is my interpretation without having anything to back this up. Why they could be given in reverse order is because that first kingdom that arose, If over time, if it's the first kingdom, it would make sense that it's going to have its downfall first, right? So they could be given in order as though their authority and power later on when we look at these kings. When we look at these kingdoms, it could be that the leopard has more power over time because it's a newer kingdom. It's still fresh. It's still new. It's still in its glory days, if you will. It hasn't started downfalling yet. So maybe that's why. I believe everything in the Bible is there for a reason. There's a reason why these are presented in a different order. It's not an accident. God didn't just say, hey, just put them in reverse order. You really trip them up there. There's a reason. God puts everything in the Bible for a reason. So when these are given in reverse order, it would make sense that they're given in their prominence. They're given in their importance or their power or their authority. But notice this is one beast. And in verse 2 it says, and the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear. So he says it's like a leopard. And its feet were as the feet of a bear. And it says, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. So it has a lot of the similarities. It has some of the body parts of the other one. And the part about it being like a leopard, I thought that it said this. I must have misspoke this morning when I made that statement. I thought that it referred to it as being like its spots, which I still assume that it is. I must just assume that and thought that it actually said spots. But it says it's like a leopard. I mean, what other way really could it be like a leopard when he looks at it without having spots? I'm sure that's what it is, but I thought it actually inserted the word spots here. But so it's like a leopard, it's like a bear, and it's like a lion, right? And then it says this, and the dragon, notice that, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and his great authority. Now that fourth beast is not identified in the Old Testament, but if you notice here, three beasts are discussed. In the Old Testament, four beasts are discussed, and there's not a lot of details about the specifics about that fourth beast, besides the fact that it's dreadful and it's terrible, and that it has iron teeth and it has claws that are of brass, it says. Claws that are of brass, and then it also tells you that it treads down everything, that it's exceedingly powerful, right? And then it has 10 horns. That's the only information that's given to you. So we know that those 10 horns are on that one head, right? If you were to take the beasts of the Old Testament in Daniel chapter number 7, and you were to just take them and smash them together, do you know what you'd get? if you take all those beasts and just smash them together, you would get a seven-headed beast that would look be like a lion, that would be bear-like, that would be what was the other one? Leopard-like, and then what's the only one left? What's mentioned here? A dragon. I believe that that fourth beast that he saw was like unto a dragon. That's why the other fourth beast that we see here is a dragon. Now notice right here it says that, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and his great authority. We'll flip over to Revelation chapter number 12, verse number 3. Revelation chapter number 12, verse number 3, it says this, and there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having seven heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his heads. Now notice that it's actually identified as a dragon when you flip over to Revelation chapter number 12. Because I believe that that one other beast in the Old Testament, when you see it, it's dreadful and it's terrible because it is a dragon. That would make perfect sense. And what would have 10 horns? Make perfect sense that it would be a dragon, right? So you see those 10 horns. In this case, if we were to compare it to the Old Testament, where are those 10 horns located? Are they distributed throughout? No, they're located on that one head, the head of the dragon, which makes perfect sense, right? So what is going on here when we see in Revelation chapter number 13, verses 1 and 2? We have all four beasts of the Old Testament just smashed together into one beast. They're just pushed together, just smashed together, and you have all the elements of all those beasts. Now, what does the fourth beast do that the other three beasts do not do in the Old Testament? Exactly. He treads down the whole world. That's another way that you can prove that the Persians and the Medes and Grecia are not those four beasts, is because it point blank says, if you would have been paying attention in Daniel 8, it says that the Persians and the Medes conquered the whole world in Daniel chapter number 8. It specifically does not say that. It leaves that out about the beast in Daniel chapter number 7. And then it specifically says that about the fourth beast in Daniel chapter number 7. So the first three beasts do not conquer the whole world. They're spread out throughout the whole world, but they do not conquer and rule the whole world. But then what do you see taking place with the fourth beast? It says that he's dreadful and he's terrible. It says that he's exceeding strong. And then it says that there's 10 horns on its head. It rises up out of the sea. So it seems to be a beast. It says that it is actually the fourth beast upon the earth. So this beast comes up later on after the first three beasts, right? But it is still on the earth at the same time as those other three beasts. So all four of these beasts are all reigning concurrently at the same time. And what happens when the fourth beast arises? He starts going about and he starts, you know, conquering the world, right? It says that there's another little horn that comes up, a little small horn that arises, right? And it says, when you read about him, it says in Daniel chapter number 7, 8, and then he's spoken of in Daniel 10 and 11, it repeatedly refers to him as being small and being little. But then it says that, I believe in Daniel 10, it says that he waxed great, saying what? That he grew. And it says that he went forth and he started conquering. It speaks of him going forth and he's warring and he's conquering. So basically, and then we also know in Daniel 7, keep this in mind because this is going to become relevant in a moment too, that it says that three horns are plucked up by the roots. So three of those horns are also plucked up by the roots. When he goes forth conquering, what does that entail to you? If he's going forth and conquering, does that sound as if at this point that the whole world is actually conquered at that time? What does that sound like? It almost does convey that the whole world is not conquered at the time that the Antichrist comes. And then this 11th horn pops up, and then he goes forth and conquers. Who would he be conquering? The three other beasts is who he would be conquering. The other three kingdoms that are upon the world at that time. Now, I want you to look here in Revelation chapter number 13, and we're going to keep reading. Look at verse number 2, what it says at the end. So it says, after it speaks of the mouth of a lion, it says, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. Verse number 3, and I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. Now we're going to notice that right here it starts speaking specifically about the beast as being the man. You say, why would it do that? It's because he is controlling this entire beast. Think about that. If you have one man and he is this little horn that pops up and he is the king of the whole kingdom and the beast is the kingdom, well, he's the beast. He dictates and decides what that beast is going to do. Everything that happens to that beast happens to him. You destroy the kingdom, who do you destroy? You destroy him. You understand what I'm saying? He is that kingdom. He is representing that kingdom. That little horn is now ruling and reigning through the what? Where are these four kingdoms at? They're over the entire world. We're going to look at that right here. Look at verse number 4. It says, "And they worshiped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" So notice right here at the point, when does it say, who is able to make war with him? Once these four beasts are amalgamated. Once they are all integrated into what? What did the four separate beasts entail? Four separate kingdoms. So what does this one beast entail? What does it convey or what does it represent? One kingdom.
Right.
What did we have on earth at that time? We had four kingdoms made up of a lion, a leopard, right? A bear. And then you have one that's dreadful and terrible. If you were to put them all together and one man was reigning over them, that would be one kingdom that's reigning all over the earth. Now, one thing that I want you to notice as well is right here is it says that they start to worship him after he has a deadly wound to his head. That's what it says in verse number 4. It says, "They worshiped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast?" And then it says this, "Who is able to make war with him?" Why are they asking the question, who is able to make war with him? Because it seems as if looking at him that you cannot kill him. Because someone killed him, and then it looks like he rose again from the dead, doesn't it? In Revelation chapter number 17, it says that the beast which was and is to come. It talks about him dying and then raising from the dead, right? So right here in verse number 5, it says this, "And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. So he is blaspheming, right? But if you look back up in verse number 1, it says that all seven of the heads, they have blasphemy written on them. What does that mean? What does that teach you? What can you learn from that? That all seven of these kingdoms are all going along with this. They're all blaspheming God. They're all in concurrence with him. When he blasphemes the Lord, when he blasphemes God, they're blaspheming God as well. They are in lockstep with this one man. They're in lockstep with the one man, which is the Antichrist, the beast. He was ruling over the world. He's the head of the world. Look at verse 7. "And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations." There we have a very clear verse. Don't read over that. Look at that one more time. "And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them." And then look at this. "And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations." So you know who he's ruling over, this beast? He's ruling over those other three kingdoms that were concurrent with him. He's ruling over those other three kingdoms that was before him. We see that fourth beast right when he rises up. He doesn't look like this amalgamated beast, does he? He doesn't look like this integrated beast, does he? But then that little horn comes up and he goes forth to conquer. And what probably happens is at the moment that he dies and comes back to life, that is when Satan gives him this power. Because think about this, who has all the kingdoms of the world? When Jesus Christ was being tempted of the devil in the wilderness, what did Satan say? He said, "All these things will I give thee if thou wilt bow down and worship me." So what makes sense at the moment that he dies and he's buried and that he's rose again, that's the moment where he is given the power from Satan, where literally all the kingdoms of the earth are given to him. And you know what happens? He starts reigning over all the kingdoms of the earth. He is the one sole power of everything. I mean, think about all the technology. Think about all the military force. Think about just the number of armies and soldiers and people. They are literally at the beck and call. It's all handed to one man. One man calls the shots. You know what he says? And this is scary. Go and kill all the saints. I want you to go. Anyone that's worshiping the God of the Bible, I want them executed if they won't take the mark. I want them put to death if they're not willing to worship me and to bow down and worship my image. Keep reading there in verse number 8. It says, "And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world." You have these people all the time say, you know, there's all these different religions. How are they all going to come together? Now, number one, if you see what's going on, there is a super strong ecumenical movement that is pushing everyone to a one world religion. Then there's obviously on the other side, in the geopolitical perspective, you have a one world government being pushed in a major way. We have the United Nations, you have the European Union, you have all these different allies, everyone's trying to come together. But you have a strong ecumenical movement where all religions are coming together. All of them. But here's the thing. It doesn't matter how close we get to that point, because what's really going to push people over the edge, all these people that are not saved, all these people that have not put their faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, some of them already even rejected the gospel, right? They've been preached Jesus and they've already rejected him. What's going to push a lot of these people over the edge? What's going to be, sealing their fate is a good way to put it, is when this man dies and he's dead for I don't know how long and then raises again from the dead. And then he comes back and what is he saying? He's just a normal guy? No, he's receiving worship. It says that he's going to magnify himself above all that is called God. This guy is standing in the temple and it says showing himself that he is God. Showing himself to be God is the way we would interpret that today. This man is saying, I am God. He died. He was what? Probably buried. He probably buried his body. I don't know exactly what happens. You're not going to leave somebody dead for days. But he dies for a long enough amount of time where people are literally willing to worship him. This is what people miss about this. How do you bring all the world together to worship a man? Because he died. And then he rose again from the dead. Notice the connection. When were they willing to worship him? When he dies. And when he raises again from the dead. He has a deadly wound to his head. I mean, this could be something as extreme of having his head cut off. Think about that. You don't know. I mean, the Satan is the one that gave him his power and his authority. How many people in this world today who are not religious, who are not saved, they're not even devout to their false religion, if some guy had his head cut off? Right? Something extreme. And then he's just miraculously here and healed. And he comes back to power. All the kingdoms, everybody is willing to, to give him the power to him at this point. How many people would neglect to worship someone like that? There would be, most people would. The majority would. Right? This is going to be something extreme, obviously, where it's willing to bring, where it's able to bring everyone together. So we see the four beasts that are on this earth. And we see this great and dreadful beast come up. He goes on a conquest once the little horn arises and he conquers all the kingdoms of the earth. During this time, while he's in battle, obviously, I believe this man is killed. When he basically has all the kingdoms almost already. He's dead for a period of time and he raises again from the dead. He walks into the temple and he declares himself to be God and the whole world, all of the power of the world, of course, because Satan has it, is given to this one man. It's given this one man all the authority of all the kingdoms of the earth. And there will be three great kingdoms upon the earth at that time. This fourth kingdom, it looks to be that it's almost already conquered the whole world, but all of it's given to him all that time. And then all the world begins to worship this man. Keep reading what it says next. Verse 9. If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints. Now here is the false prophet who arises. It says in verse 11, and I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. And he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. So now you have this false prophet who also, there's a mouth given unto him, he's preaching, right? He's going forth and he is compelling the whole world to worship this man. It says in verse 13, and he doeth great wonders. So he's performing miracles so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark. So you are not going to be able to buy anything or sell anything. Your transactions will totally be cut off if you are not willing to take this mark. The mark of the beast. And how do you get it? Do you just walk up and just receive the mark? Do they just punch it on your forehead or on your hand? No, you have to first worship the beast, the Bible teaches. You have to first. So he is going to make it mandatory. After he's, died and rose again, he is going to make it mandatory to worship him. And if you don't worship him, it's not like, oh, well, you got your God. Not happening. It's like with Nebuchadnezzar, when he sets up the image, you don't have a choice, right? You have to worship him. You have to worship the image of him. And if you are not willing to worship the image of the beast, then you're not going to be able to buy or sell. And you're also, and if they catch you, you're going to be put to death. Keep reading what it says there at the end. It says in verse 17, let's read it one more time. And that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Verse 18 is key. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast. And then it says, as for it is the number of a man. So we know that when it started speaking of the beast there for a while, it was speaking of a specific man during that period of time. And like I said, that's why I pointed out, that's important to understand that this little horn that came up, he is the ruler of the entire world. Now that beast is him. He controls that. He is that kingdom. He controls the entire world power, if you will. And then it says at the end, and his number is 666. That has got to be the most cryptic statement in the entire Bible. 666. I want you to turn over we're going to end here actually in Revelation chapter number 17. Revelation chapter number 17. Now, this is not an exhaustive study. There are other things that I could point out for this, but I hope I was able to show you things that you haven't seen. We're going to look at one more thing that's super interesting here at the end. But I hope I was able to point things out to you and help you to look at this from a different perspective. You know, I'm sure over time there will be things that I will change my views on, tweak my views on. This is by far of everything that I've ever studied in the Bible. This is by far the most deep, you know, hard to understand, just difficult, teaching or doctrine, if you will, in the Bible. How this kingdom actually works. And for a long time, you know, I really struggled understanding how that worked, why the beasts were all in connection. Those four beasts all, you know, in the Old Testament, I tried to fit the timing in. And you know what really makes a major mistake for Bible students when you start off thinking that first kingdom is Nebuchadnezzar. And then everybody, what do they all try to do? They all make that last kingdom Rome, right? And then they say, well, there's going to be a revised, you know, the only way that this prophecy can be fulfilled is that last kingdom, it must be Rome revived. I've heard that so many times. Or it's carried on through what? The Roman Catholic Church. And then they pin everything on the Roman Catholic Church. It's because when you start off counting with Nebuchadnezzar being that first beast, you're off one already, right? You're off, number one, it's four beasts that are reigning contemporaries, right, as contemporaries. But even if it was successively one after another, you would still be off one. I mean, you would be totally misidentifying the kingdom as one that was previous to that. You understand what I'm saying? How that's a major mistake? So you need to make sure you're paying close attention. You're reading the Bible. You're studying the Bible. You're not just receiving everything you hear. Even what I say. I'm sure there's tons of stuff that I'm wrong about when I'm preaching. I hope everybody's paying close attention. I'm sure there are, hopefully not tons of stuff, but I'm sure there are errors in what I'm studying today. I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. You know, whether you're a pastor, a preacher, or somebody sitting in the... This is complicated stuff is my point. This is not exhaustive. Study this stuff on your own. You might notice something and come to me and we can look at it together. We can study it out together. You know, end times Bible prophecy stuff is very interesting. It's interesting to study, and you should be willing, let me get to this, you should be willing to change your views if you're wrong. You should be willing to tweak things if you're wrong. You need to have a humble heart and understand the Bible's perfect, the Bible's correct. You're not going to understand everything, and especially something cryptic like this. So study things out on your own and don't just take everything that I tell you. All right, so here in Revelation chapter number 17, there's something very interesting here at the end of the chapter. So what you have in Revelation chapter 17 is John saying that he wants to see, or the angel comes to John, and the angel tells John that he is going to show him the judgment of the great whore, right? Well, the way in which the great whore is judged is detailed in chapter 18, but it's also spoken of at the very end of chapter 17. I want you to look at the very end of chapter number 17. Read there in verse number 16. It says this in chapter number 17, verse number 16. And the 10 horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. So who is going to, when we read right here, who is going to destroy the whore? Who is going to destroy Israel or the city of Jerusalem? It's going to be these 10 kings, right? It's going to be these 10 kings. And it says the 10 kings on the beast. So what does the beast look like? Looks like a bear. Looks like a leopard. Looks like a lion. Now, why are they doing this? Look at verse number 17. For God hath put it in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast. So whose will are they actually fulfilling when they destroy the great whore? They're fulfilling God's will, right? It says God put it in their heart, those 10 kings, to fulfill his will, and he says, and to agree and to give their kingdom unto the beast. So when the beast, comes and requests the kingdom in the way, however this all works, they agree. Why? Because God put it in their heart to fulfill his will. So God is using these 10 kings, right, which are on this beast made up of a lion, a leopard, and a bear, right? He's using these 10 kings of this kingdom, lion, leopard, bear, to destroy the city of Jerusalem. I want you to go to Hosea chapter number 13. Hosea chapter number 13, we're going to end here. Hosea chapter number 13. God speaking of destroying Jerusalem. Now, I don't know if you remember this or not, but I actually, in Hosea chapter number 1, I showed you how he's referring to Jerusalem as being a whore in Hosea chapter number 1. And he's speaking about how he is going to destroy the whore, the harlot, which is Jerusalem, in chapter number 2. When you get back here to Hosea chapter number 3, he says in chapter number 13, he says in chapter number 13 in verse number 1, he says, when Ephraim spake trembling, he exalted himself in Israel, but when he offended in Baal, he died. Now, it'll use Ephraim and it'll use Israel interchangeably all throughout the Bible. You'll see that taking place. What he's speaking of here in chapter number 13 and chapter number 14, if you look at chapter number 14, verse number 1, he says, O Israel, return unto the Lord thy God. So who is he speaking to? The whole book of Hosea is God speaking unto the nation of Israel, speaking unto his people, unto Jerusalem, and he speaks, like I said, about destroying them in the first couple of chapters. Well, I want you to look at something really interesting. In chapter number 13, verse number 5, it says this, I did know thee in the wilderness, in the land of great drought. According to their pasture, so were they filled. They were filled, and their heart was exalted. Therefore have they forgotten me. Notice what's taking place here. He found them in the wilderness, and he says that he filled them, right? He blessed them is what he's saying. He said that time came where they forgot him, where they forgot him, right? What do you have the great whore saying in Revelation chapter number 18? I sit a queen and am no widow and shall see no sorrow. What is she saying? She's saying that nothing ever happened in the past. She's a widow. She isn't a widow. She doesn't have a husband. She never was married. Who did she forget? She forgot God, didn't she? She forgot about God, right? She forgot that she was once married. She was once entered into a covenant with God. Now, keep in mind what we just read in Revelation 17. At that very time when she's a harlot and she's a whore, and God destroys that city, who does he use? He uses that beast, doesn't he? The 10 kings of that beast. And what does that beast look like? A bear, a lion, and what? And a leopard, right? I want you to look at what it says right here. Look at verse number 17. Therefore I will be unto them as a lion, as a leopard by the way, while I observe them. Look at this. I will meet them as a bear that is bereaved of her whelps. Notice, all three of those animals are mentioned. And what's going on here? He's punishing who? He's punishing Israel. When those 10 kings go to destroy that city, are they doing that just because the beast wants them to do it? Is that the reason why? That's not why. They may have wanted to do it anyways, but guess what? God already put it in their heart to agree. Right. They were going to destroy that city because that was the destruction that God had preordained unto them. We look back at Hosea, the book of Hosea, and it prophesies of the day of the Lord coming repeatedly. It prophesies in the minor prophets of the destruction of God, talking about Jerusalem, the destruction of God that would come upon Jerusalem. And we see where God explains how they forgot him. They forgot the Lord, right? And what is he going to do because of that? It says that he's going to meet them, it says, look at verse number 7 more in turn. Therefore I will be unto them as a lion, as a leopard by the way, he says, will I observe them? He says, I will meet them as a bear that is bereaved of her whelps and will rend the call of their heart. And there will I devour them like a lion. The wild beast shall tear them. Notice that. What are they called in Daniel chapter number 7? Beasts rise up out of the sea. And what do you have in Revelation chapter number 17 there, and then also happening concurrently, Revelation 18, when the city is caught on fire? What do you have taking place? You have God fulfilling His will through what? A kingdom that is what? A lion and a leopard and a bear. And God said in the Old Testament, I'm going to be like a lion when I destroy you. I'm going to be like a leopard waiting by the way. I'm going to be like a bear robbed of her whelps. And then you have this one kingdom, and what does it do? All the kings of that one kingdom come against them. And what is that? God fulfilling His will. God is the one who does it. Do you see how it's important to understand these four kingdoms are all at one time? Because you know what you have then is you have the leopard, you have the lion, and you have the bear, and the ten kings that are concurrently ruling with, because He gives them that power, it says, during that time, and then they come forth, and then they destroy this kingdom. The Bible's awesome, man. I've said that a million times, but it's so cool. You can find you know, if someone were to look at the Bible and just say, oh, that's just coincidence, you're out of your mind. Yeah, right. There is no book like this that's ever been written. Right. No man could ever sit down and put together what they would say, oh, those are just coincidences.
Right.
That is, you are crazy. Right. This book is alive.
Amen.
This book is living. This book has power. And the things in this book, no man could ever write this book.
Right.
This book is far superior than any knowledge, any intelligence, any intellect that any man could ever have. And the prophecies that are fulfilled of the Old Testament, God fulfills prophecies to a T. And then it's not a coincidence you get in the New Testament, what does He use to destroy them? He says, I'm going to be like a lion, I'm going to be like a bear, I'm going to be like a leopard. And He uses the kingdom of what? A lion, of a bear, of a leopard, and then destroys them with that kingdom. It's amazing. Let's bow our heads and have a word of prayer. Heavenly Father God, we thank You, dear Lord, for just giving us the Bible in such an amazing book, dear Lord. You could have altered a book that was not interesting if You chose to do that, dear Lord. We're so thankful that it's such an interesting book. We ask You that You would ignite in us a zeal and a passion to read Your Word, to love Your Word, to learn from Your Word. Just please guide us in our understanding. If we're wrong about certain interpretations of the kingdoms, dear Lord, of timings of certain things, of anything in Your Word, we ask You that You would straighten us out. Help us to be diligent in studying Your Word. Help us to also help us to care and to consider everything and to care about having the correct interpretation of the Bible in all areas and not to just consider some parts not important, dear Lord God. We ask You that You be with us, and as I said, just lead, guide, and direct us. Keep us safe. Help our church to grow, dear Lord God, and just be with us and bless us. And in Jesus Christ's name, amen.